You told me crypto is the thing I know the least about.
One of the things I know the least about.
Are you trying to play the humble dude here or?
No, I think it does benefit if they just go in with a lot of humility because.
Igneous Terranus, the head of public liaison for Mantle.
An Ethereum layer 2 with over $2 billion in total value locked.
Previously the head of communications at Bybit.
I've been experimenting a lot with Midjourney. I find it just fascinating. Like
to explain why Bitcoin made so much sense to you when you started observing it.
How does a society function when you look at kind of like what are the civilizations that did really well in the past? It was the civilizations that traded.
And how hard is it to sponsor a Formula One team?
So Red Bull has been a very successful team before the current kind of like Max Verstappen dominance. They won 4 world championships back to back with Vettel. Red Bull Racing, the Formula One team, is the subsidiary of the marketing department of a fizzy drinks company. And then they're able to beat luxury cars, premium brands that have been making great cars for decades.
So what's your big brain take on meme coins?
If there's one thing that is even more scarce resource than money in this market is actually the amount of attention span. When you're able to have this powerful tool that is meme coin that is able to capture people's imagination and bring them in, then a portion of those people will stay for the technology. Mantle inherited the large treasury from BitDAO, more than $3 billion now. Mantle has 270,000 ETH equivalents and hundreds of millions of stablecoins, making it the single largest on-chain treasury, even bigger than Ethereum itself.
Take me through the short version of the Mantle story.
The first kind of incarnation of a Mantle was called.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to take a short moment to introduce our partner, Mantle, who helps us make this show possible. Mantle was created to hyperscale the Ethereum network with what we call a layer 2 that helps users like you and me transact much faster and at a fraction of the cost of the Ethereum network. Mantle has over $2 billion in total value locked, has a mega treasury of $3.7 billion in Bitcoin, ETH, and stablecoins, and has the largest eco fund of the industry with more than $200 million to invest into new projects that want to join the Mantle ecosystem. And that's not it. Mantle recently launched their Mantle Reward Station, which enables you to access some of the absolute best pre-sales deals in the industry by locking some MNT tokens. For example, Mantle just partnered with Athena Labs, one of the absolutely most hyped projects in the industry, to airdrop 2.5 billion ENA points to the MNT stakers. The airdrop was worth more than $3.6 million as pre-market value before ENA token listing and had huge potential. If you want to get access to the absolute best deal out there, get yourself some MNT tokens and lock them on the Mantle Reward Station by following the link down below in the description. It's easy to join and you can unlock your tokens at any time. The team behind Mantle are extremely smart people who I personally trust with some of my money and who I personally know outside of crypto. We actually had Igneous Terranus and Jordi Alexander on this podcast, who both are key figures in the Mantle ecosystem. So I invite you to watch these two very candid and in-depth conversations to develop your own opinion. And please, 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 if you enjoy this show, hit the like button, leave a comment in the comment section, and subscribe to this channel. The more subscribers, the better the guests. Thank you so much for your help. And now, on to today's episode.
You told me that people call you the walking encyclopedia, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
You know a lot of things, and you have a interesting story between Formula One and crypto, right? Because the crypto is the reason why we're here today.
Yep.
Do you want to tell us who you are?
Yeah.
And how you brought crypto onto Formula One or Formula One into crypto?
Yeah. So my name is Igneous Terranus. I'm now the public liaison for Mantle. In my previous employment, I was head of communications at Bybit. I also dabbed in sponsorship deals and some regulatory work. And it was in 2021, we actually saw the opportunity to have Bybit on the Red Bull Racing car. And it took like months of negotiation and back and forth. But we were extremely gratified to see the brilliant bright color of Bybit logo on the winning Formula One car for the last 2.5 seasons in a row. So especially last season, this season actually Red Bull won 2 for 2, and it was 1-2. Before that, last year Red Bull won every race out, except for Singapore. So yeah, in terms of like sporting records, that's as good as you would get in really any sports.
Mm. We have some wine on the table.
Oh yeah.
So we'll start with a cheer.
Yes.
You know, and so the reason why we have wine today is, I mean, obviously we both love wine, but
mm-hmm.
you told me yesterday that there is a Roman saying
yeah.
with wine.
Yes, it's in vino veritas, or in like modern church Latin, it would be in vino veritas. It's in wine, truth.
In wine, truth. Which means that when you drink wine, you tell the truth.
Yeah, this is what the ancient Romans believe, and this is something that I more or less agree.
So yesterday was the 15th of March.
Yes.
The reason why you were drinking wine yesterday, right? Because uh-huh. it was the second anniversary
yes.
of you and your wife.
Yeah.
But it was also the 15th. The 15th of March was also the second, when Julius Caesar was assassinated.
Yes.
Why did you choose to get married on the day of Julius Caesar assassination?
Yeah. It just happens to be one of the days that, so like we needed to, like, according to the register of marriage, there are only several days available. It was during COVID times. Mm. So we looked at it and I was like, oh, 15th of March. Like, what is one sure way of ensuring I will never forget our anniversary? I'll pick this date.
Because you think otherwise you would forget it.
I won't, but you know, it's kind of like, you know, like I still have all my mental faculties, knock on wood, but you know, who knows? Like in 30 years, maybe my memory is not as good.
Maybe less if you spend a lot of time in crypto.
Oh yeah. Yeah, you're actually fast running your mental capacity.
Absolutely.
Crypto.
You're a big brain, obviously.
Yeah.
But you told me crypto is the thing I know the least about.
One of the things I know least about.
So... are you trying to play the humble dude here or?
No, I think, you know, one thing that kind of I really, we learned from crypto is like, doesn't matter how much you think you know, like when you talk to different groups. So like crypto is actually not one industry, but like you have different groups of people working on different things. When we actually talk to developers, a lot of times like the terminology and the words they use, we actually need to kind of like, you know, go reach on GitHub and to look at things to even understand. So I think, yeah, one thing that even though kind of there's a lot of like big egos in crypto, it does actually benefit one immensely if they just go in with a lot of humility because, like, you know, there's so much we do not know and so much we can learn from the people that we come into contact with.
Yeah, I think humility is definitely a key word here, especially after what happened two years ago, right? Mm. I think it put everyone down back on earth and everybody realized that we're not that special, right? We're not that different and... I mean, I think overall, I mean, it was terrible, obviously, but it's probably a net plus for the industry because you have all the bad actors out, plus you have people who are survivors who are much more humble and
Absolutely.
Realizing that they don't know things, as you say, right? You told me you started to observe Bitcoin in 2010.
Yeah.
And then you started to actively invest in the space in late 2015.
Yeah.
What caught your attention at that time and why did you take the leap?
So first of all, anytime when there's a new kind of like technological announcement, I always like just really like to pay a lot of attention to it. I've been experimenting a lot with like the likes of Midjourney. I find it just fascinating. Like ChatGPT, I more or less understand the process. Like, you know, guessing the next word, and then like the way I hear it described and the way I see it work, it makes perfect sense. But like for sort of maybe I'm not as graphically kind of like the visually in tuned as I am with words, I find the ability for like Midjourney and Sora to do what they do just fascinating. I'm paying a lot of attention. When sort of like the first you know when Bitcoin came about, you know, the white paper, it really just kind of like puts you into a different way of paradigm, different way of thinking. It's like, you know, these are things are always done. You know, you always took for granted that, you know, even since the Roman times, you know, the state means the coin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just another tangent, because I really like to go on tangent. I really like to talk about Roman stuff. Mint and money, they're actually cognates, as in they actually came from the same word. So what happened was that the original Roman mint was built at the temple of Juno Moneta. So Juno is the Roman version of Hera, of the Greek pantheon. And it's currently actually just behind the monument to the fatherland in Rome. So the great white marble building back of it is the city church of Rome. It still has the word SPQR, Sanitus Populusque Romanus, on it. And that is the original mint. So moneta actually means to warn, to kind of like warn someone of something. So that word actually gave us words like remonstrate and monster and so on and so forth. So like monster, remonstrate, even demonstrate, and money and mint, they all are related. They are all cognates. It's just kind of like a very interesting thing to see. You know, you don't actually need the state and a government to actually have that. And you can basically, through the consensus of mathematics, which is, you know, a lot purer than, you know, putting trust in other humans and in other agents who have, you know, different incentives, different wishes. Whereas if you kind of just rely on pure mathematics and encryption, it actually removes the human out of the equation. That is, you know, the foundation of this money value system.
If you look back at history, maybe that would be an interesting one. What's been done for hundreds, if not thousands of years, is the same as what is being done now, right? You have a whatever central bank or government or whatever equivalent was it in the past, who are basically emitting debt and printing money to finance. Now it's wars and economic crisis. Before it was probably more wars and growth. Maybe you want to go a bit into that. Maybe you have a few examples, right? Because you like to talk about the past, to explain why Bitcoin made so much sense, or actually, I say, potentially made sense to you when you started observing it.
Yeah, just like throughout history, like, you know, the power of money. Like, so how does a society function? You need trade. Like, you know, when people talk about civilization, one of the cornerstone of civilization is actually coinage and trade. And when you look at kind of like what are the civilizations that did really well in the past, it was the civilizations that traded. Because when you actually kind of like, you only have things that you grow by yourself, like it's always a limited market. And, you know, there were days during the great age of seafaring where you have the Dutch and the Portuguese, the Spanish, they were chartering, armada all across the world. They could kind of ship the spices back in Indonesia and then sell it per ounce at a greater price point than gold. Because trade is what makes, you know, society flourish, and the exchange of ideas and so on and so forth. Since time immemorial, like the state has really tried to control, like they either tax or they decide, you know, you need to get a license, or you need to kind of like enter into a guild that is officially approved, or you need to kind of like pay taxes. Like, but back then, like taxes were actually pretty small. When you consider nowadays, like the income tax, like 30% in a lot of places, and then, you know, even corporate tax at such a higher price point. Like famously, the founding fathers of the United States, they started a revolution because there was taxation without representation. What's the percentage do you think they were taxed back then? They were taxed at less than 3%. 3%, they were willing to start a revolution with bloodshed. Nowadays, like, it's even more. But the funny thing is, like, government doesn't actually rely on tax to fund. They say they do, but they can actually just print more money. It's just a way to control.
Exactly. So that's what I heard, actually. I mean, obviously, it's in the theory of crypto, right? But I've heard that, I don't remember who was saying that, but like a big authority was actually saying, hey, some people should ask the question, if you're able to print money when there is an issue, why are we paying taxes, right? And the actual answer to that is exactly what you just said. It's not... The taxes are actually not, it's just an excuse, right?
Yeah, it's exertion of control. What is one way to exert itself to be omnipresent in the daily life. Because, like, you know, doesn't matter. Like, we can be very self-sufficient, but no person is an island. Like, just like there was this book about so-called a thousand things. So this guy, he just, like, one day he woke up, he decided, oh, you know, how many hands does it take actually to have my morning coffee? And then he was kind of retraced the entire kind of, like, you know, from you know, the logistics, the coffee shop, all the way to where it was planted in Brazil. Like, how many steps actually does it take to get this simple you know, cup of espresso? It actually takes more than 1,000 people. So, you know, we cannot live independently the way kind of, I saw, you know, that Thoreau talk about, kind of, he lives in Walden. But, like, all that includes transaction. What the state wants is to be in each and every transaction. That's what, like, a lot of, like, CBDC is trying to do. Like, they can actually monitor every transaction. They can ensure, you know, they, like, the state or, like, powers of government can transmute, can enter into, you know, every interaction, every transaction that we have with other members of the society.
And if someone just asks you, why does the state need or want to be in every transaction, what's your answer?
Control. I mean, it's...
But why does the government need to control?
For better,
what happens if there is less control?
Well, like, what does the government exist to do? Like, so we tend to think, oh, you know, countries, nation states has been the case all this way. It only has 400 years of history. And a lot of things, like, we take as, like, things that had been existing for the longest time, it actually has a very short period of history. But, you know, even for crypto, like, you know, in order to create a consensus, like, you know, you have the mathematical, you have the technological consensus that is achieved through encryption. But, you know, for a group of people to huddle around, especially for a group of people to huddle around a meme coin, you need to have some sort of, like, a cultural reference and story that people buy into, because that is how you connect people across space and time, and how you are able to kind of, like, have a community. Because, like, you know, we social animals, you know, to be able to do something that is greater than the individual, we need to have some way to either collaborate or conspire with people. Talking a lot. Another example I like to throw around is, like, it, just imagine kind of one person, one human is trying to fight one chimpanzee or one gorilla. Gorilla wins, hands down. 10 humans fight 10 gorillas. 10 gorillas will still win. But when you think 100 people fight 100 gorillas, who will win? I think most of us will agree was 100 people going to win. But how do we win if we're not, like, at equal strength? It's because we are able to, you know, collaborate. We are able to work together in a way that is dependent on, you know, we buy into a common myth, a common narrative that we more or less can all agree on.
Amazing. So back to crypto. So you started to invest, right? 2015, 16?
Yeah.
And one of your first, or probably your first working experience in crypto, because you decided to go all in, right? Mm. Was Bybit.
Yeah.
Became head of communication,
yes,
right? At Bybit. We had Ben on the podcast.
Oh.
Why do you think Bybit became so huge?
It's just very well run. You know, it has a very good product. Doesn't matter how you think of kind of, like, different exchanges, like, for retail, for of course, different people have different needs. But when you actually talk to seasoned traders who are actually, like, trading serious size and, you know, high frequency traders, or, like, you know, all of them, they would say Bybit's product ever since the beginning is the best. Like, even when FTX was really kind of, like, on the ascendancy, like, everyone just really didn't like the product because, like, they famously only had 6 engineers. Mm. Bybit has, like, 600, if not 800 nowadays, engineers. And the product is just so well produced. And, you know, when you have kind of, like, a core of seasoned traders on it, kind of, like, either through word of mouth or just kind of, like, you know, because they are already producing, like, they're already generating so much liquidity, it just makes it a lot easier for everyone else to trade on it. So it really is kind of, like, it does a lot of things right, but the core of it is, you know, the product is really good, and the risk engine, everything is just done with a lot of thought and deliberate decisions.
Yeah, you also said during the podcast that you know, as you said that you were the first ones to go into sport sponsorship.
Yeah.
You guys also were the first one to make it much easier for, you know, affiliate marketers, basically for the influencers to understand exactly, kind of building a CRM.
Yeah.
And a dashboard for for the influencers, and that actually made a massive difference, and that everyone copied Bybit actually on that one, and that helped a lot the growth, because it's really interesting. Like, I mean, you are a very technical person, obviously. Ben is a sales guy, right? And he's the guy who's gonna say, I mean, he's also very very technical, but he's like a salesperson. And he's the guy who's gonna say, he actually says in the trailer of the podcast, the engineers were telling him, "Hey, we should add a second pair, ETH, or a third pair, like BitMEX is doing." And he was saying, "Guys, no one gives a fuck about the second and the third pair because no one knows we exist. Yeah. So we need to get out there and do everything we can so everybody knows we exist." And they've been killing it with the affiliate marketing program and what you guys did in sport sponsorship.
Yeah. Oh, but Ben is a very shrewd person. Like he sometimes act very cleverly, especially like he's a very he's a magnetic person. He has a magnetic, charming personality. But like when he is actually making business decision, it's always very very on the point. Yeah, like sports sponsorship, it's kind of like exactly what you said. Like in the beginning, you really want to concentrate your offering because like you want to punch through. There's so much noise that if you kind of like just start, oh, it's like, you know, we try to sell something on the internet. Oh, I'm here for everyone. You actually won't get that far. Whereas if you kind of like just focus on a very small niche, but internet kind of like amplifies that, you're able to find all those people that you wouldn't be otherwise able to find without the internet. And then suddenly you can find like all those small Reddit subreddits, but like they have a very very niche topic, but they have like a tenth of thousands of passionate people around the world. Same thing with that. When you start, you actually really want to make your product offering really really concentrated, really really laser focused. But once there's a level of success, you obviously want to appeal to more and more like-minded people. And sports is a great way of doing it, especially kind of, you know, people who are into Formula One. Formula One is a high octane, high risk, high reward, sport. And a lot of people who enjoy Formula One, they are actually a little bit of risk takers. They enjoy the adrenaline that comes with, you know, being validated on their choices. So it feels a very natural match. And I remember like in the early days, we were even talking about, it almost feels like Red Bull Racing and Bybit are the same brand, but born into two different bodies. In a way, it was just a really good match. Same for like all the other sponsorships that Bybit did throughout the years. Borussia Dortmund, German Bundesliga football club, they just recently entered the quarterfinals of Champions League again. So congratulations to Borussia Dortmund. They share the same brand color as Bybit, so it felt like a really good match as well. Remember Ben was like 15 minutes before the announcement, he was like, what's a football team that shares color? And then a lot of people actually said Borussia Dortmund, and then he just said, oh, yeah, Bybit is becoming a part of Borussia Dortmund. Everyone was astounded. They were like, how did you do the deal in 15 minutes? Obviously, it was done before, but, you know, Ben is able to, he's able to kind of always tell a story that's more interesting sometimes than facts. But, you know, you kind of like just find the way he say things a better story than otherwise.
Talking about story, this probably an interesting story on the, you know, landing a sponsorship with Red Bull Formula One, because obviously, in hindsight, you can say, listen, we're a mega exchange, we have the means, but it's probably not enough, right? Like, how hard is it to sponsor a Formula One team?
Yeah, I think in a way, because there are other people who did it before, like FTX obviously had a sponsorship with Mercedes already. So like it moved Overton window a little bit. So it became like something that people would even consider. Like, but yeah, it was very difficult. So Red Bull has been a very successful team. They, before the current kind of like Max Verstappen dominance, they won four world championships back to back with Vettel. And, they're one of the most successful brands. And when you think about it, they're actually kind of like the perfect kind of like, they embody the crypto spirit so well, because Red Bull Racing, the Formula One team, is the subsidiary of the marketing department of a fizzy drinks company. And then they are able to beat Ferrari.
It's crazy.
Mercedes, yeah. McLaren, luxury cars, premium car brands that have been making great cars for racetrack and passengers for decades. And then this upstarter, subsidiary of a marketing department, just said, I'm going to race cars. And then they are, you know, almost like they're the most dominant car on the track last year. So it is the biggest middle finger to establishment. It's the same way, you know, of crypto. Crypto is the biggest defiance. And, you know, the success of crypto actually validates that the system that we have for financial, economy, health is rotten. And we need it, something that is out of box thinking, the way, you know, a fizzy drinks company decided, oh, we're going to enter into this the highest of elite race car racing, and we're going to make a name for ourselves out of it.
How do you think that this was possible? Is it just a question of means?
It's a lot of you need to understand kind of like what Red Bull stand for. This part about crypto and Red Bull's similarity, actually, like I didn't even need to think, because I did it so many times with the Red Bull people. Like they appreciate, like, and to be able to, a lot of times, like, I think, you know, this is true for any partnership, any sponsorship, or any kind of like collaboration you enter into. It's inevitable that, because brands are never going to be identical, there's always going to be a dilution of the brand messages. So like, especially kind of self-respecting brands, they're very careful about that. But what you kind of like try to convince them, especially kind of like, you know, obviously now we hope in time, Bybit will be as a household name as Red Bull, you know. But of course, like, Red Bull is the better known brand. So when the conversation was when sort of we entered the conversation, you need to kind of to show that how much you appreciate and how much you understand. So like, the knowledge about the sport, the knowledge about their thinking, the knowledge about the strategy they deployed, the knowledge about that, actually showing that you did homework and showing you respect what they do, is actually very, very important for them. Then they know how much you appreciate the sport, how much you appreciate the brand. They know when they enter a partnership with you, you're not just gonna mess it up with, because I think Mercedes were just very not happy with the fact they entered into a partnership with FTX, because FTX didn't respect them as much as say Bybit did, right? Like, FTX blew up. It's probably even like not the most of it, because they, like, the way FTX marketed it was not well done, not really respecting the sport in itself. Whereas I think, you know, a lot of times, like, when Bybit enters into a partnership, or, you know, when Bybit entered into a partnership with Red Bull, it really comes from a position of understanding and respect, and almost kind of like you cherish your partner's brand as much as you do. And this is something that we do at Mentor as well, is that like Mentor, because it's a blockchain, so it has lots of dApps built on Mentor, 180 now. Every time we enter into a partnership, we are so protective of the branding, the messaging of our partners. Sometimes, like, when we see kind of like a third party would like, basically they mock up some poster, we're like, oh, this is not how they do their logo, like, because when it's a dark background, you want to use the light color logo instead. Or sometimes we would say, you know, because crypto, we like to spell things like creatively. These are capital letters, these are lowercase letters. And we'll say, they spell all their name capital letter. So, we would actually step up to help ensure, you know, our partners are presented in the best light and in the light they want. And I think this level of just kind of like being protective of the brands that you work with, and you know, you feel kind of like that kinship and that ownership, even for you know, people you work with, is something that they deeply appreciate, and it will make the partnership really grow from strength to strength across time.
Ladies and gentlemen, as you probably know, we are teaming up with Astar Network on this show. Astar Network is a decentralized blockchain platform that aims to bring billions of people into Web3. And the Astar team has a very specific strategy to make this happen: to partner with the biggest conglomerates in Web2 and help them onboard their customers into our world, the Web3 world. If you want to check out for yourself, I invite you to watch the Candid podcast I recorded with Sota Watanabe, the founder of Startale Labs and Astar Network. And now on to today's episode.
What is Mentor? If you had to explain it to your mother, I'd like for the rest of this conversation, especially the crypto part, because we're going to get into a lot of, I'd say, fairly technical. I mean, for you, maybe not, but for most people who are watching, fairly technical question. Let's try to talk as if we're talking to maybe not your daughter because she's 8 months old, right? But let's say she's 10 years old, or let's say you talk to her mother, like everything should be understandable as much as possible by people who don't really understand these things.
Mento is a way to scale Ethereum. Ethereum is the world computer. This is kind of like the shortest way of saying it. And then I think, you know, a lot of times, like, you don't actually want to give an answer that actually explains everything, but like you kind of like put the broad strokes on and then encourage them to ask more questions, I think is the best way. Cause like that is how, you know, you activate their curiosity. So, we really think, you know, of course, like Solana is going very strong now, but, Ethereum more or less has established such a dominant position going forward. It is the world computer. It is where the premium smart contracts gonna run. You know, for retail, for degen, for a lot of that. When people who want to hunt for 100x, 1000x meme coins, Solana is a good choice. But especially with the Dankun upgrade that happened 2 days ago. 3 days now, 13th, 2 days, 3 days, depending on what time zone you are. Now layer twos are so cheap. Layer twos are actually cheaper than Solana itself. So it really just opens so much opportunity for the Ethereum ecosystem. And because, you know, this upgrade actually benefits layer two more than Ethereum, you can say this is the moment where layer twos have truly come to age and they are a part of Ethereum. So, you know, Mento is our vision of how to hyperscale Ethereum to help mass adoption. So, for it to truly be the internet computer that everyone uses for every transaction, you obviously still need to increase the throughput. And, you know, on layer two, when you make the transactions, make the execution off chain, and then only batch them up at the end of a block and publish it back onto L1, that way you can really grow just like exponentially, and then really still, because it's built on Ethereum, ensure the security is not compromised. Because we're drinking. It's like, instead of paying for every drink, you get a tab and then you pay at the end of the day, at the end of the night of a drinking session. So this is how kind of like, in the simplest terms, how a roll-up layer two does when it comes to batching transactions.
Take me through the short version of the Mental story, because it didn't start as Mental, right?
Yeah.
Maybe the link between Bybit, BitDAO, and Mental.
Yeah.
So people understand that this project has a really solid background and that there is a reason why it's starting to become really big today and it is in a big momentum.
Yeah. So the first kind of incarnation of Mental was called BitDAO. BitDAO is a decentralized autonomous organization, and at its height, it was the largest in the world in terms of its treasury. It was started by a lot of us who actually worked at Bybit. We were moonshining on this side project and received a lot of support. So Bybit actually contributed more than $1 billion worth of ETH and a stablecoin to BitDAO because it really believed the vision. So BitDAO is a vision to kind of like really create changes in the Web3 world and to really kind of like accelerate mass adoption through a non-corporate structure. And a lot of like early partners of BitDAO actually bought into the idea. Peter Thiel of PayPal fame and Founders Fund, Pantera, Spartan, so on and so forth, Dragonfly, of course. So BitDAO managed to raise, you know, hundreds of million funds and then received the largest from Bybit, became the largest DAO and was investing in all sorts of keystone infrastructure that will become important as mass adoption comes. But like,
so it was a fund initially.
Yeah, it basically acted as a investment DAO. Even though kind of it had like much loftier ambitions, but like in manifestation, it manifested as investment DAO. But we kind of felt like, for the everyday user, for the everyday Web3 aficionado, like just someone who is interested, you're never going to capture people's imagination with investment DAO. Like, you know, it's great, but you know, it's kind of like, you know, who is excited about all the VCs, right?
Absolutely.
Like, so we needed to make something that we are actively contributing instead of just kind of like signing checks. And looking at kind of like the lessons we learned from the last cycle, we really thought, you know, Ethereum has more or less established its dominant position. So we want to be Ethereum aligned as much as possible. But Ethereum has its problems. So like all the alternative layer ones, they are right, at least in one thing, is that Ethereum has bottlenecks then that prevents it from better scalability. So we were trying to do something that is has the same or comparable level of security as Ethereum, but really allows it to hyperscale. And, you know, with blobs nowadays, you know, you have a lot of cost savings, but back when we didn't have it, we thought what is a very good way of doing it is actually we got, you know, acquainted with people from EigenLayer. So EigenLayer is capturing a lot of people's attention. It's the premium restaking layer, the largest, the latest round they raised from A16Z, one of the most recognized brand in crypto VC funding. They raised 100 million from A16Z alone in the last round. They didn't even need money from anyone else. And they had this product called EigenDA that is a data availability layer. So when you kind of like have transactions on layer two, layer two cost is actually really low. The vast majority of the cost, even for layer two Ethereum scaling solution, it's actually when you publish data and when you kind of retrieve data back on Ethereum layer one, because you're still competing with all the other transactions who wants to be fit in the block. And EigenDA does it in its own DA layer, which really allows a significant cost reduction. But because EigenDA is backed by EigenLayer's restaking, so like you're actually renting security from Ethereum stakers themselves, really allows you to bootstrap security, bootstrap liquidity. It's like, you know, liquidity on demand. Like, you know, when you need a car, you get ride sharing, or like Netflix, it's Uber and Netflix or Grab, because we're in Singapore, for liquidity and security. Mantle is also interesting in the sense that it is the first modular L2. So monolithic chains like Ethereum, especially before the merge and before the blobs, everything, execution, data availability, consensus finality down in the same layer using the same block. So this is good when there's not much traffic, but when there's a surge in activity, you see like gas price go to hundreds of dollars. And same for Solana, it's all monolithic. Whereas we actually kind of like build it in a Lego kind of way. We take the best of everyone. So execution on Mantle is down on Mantle. Consensus finality is down on Ethereum, and then data availability is down on Mantle DA powered by EigenDA technology. We're able to take the best of everything. And what it further does is when we need to change the code, when we need to have an upgrade, like we did yesterday, we had the Mantle V2 Tectonic upgrade. We only need to change the parts we need to change. Everything else can stay the same. So for Ethereum, like they've been working on this Dancoin upgrade for 2 years and took months of planning, months of scheduling. They need to test down multiple test nets to make sure, because a monolithic chain is like a wood block. In order to kind of print something new, a new book, you need to carve a new wood block. You can't just smirch some words off. Whereas a modular chain is more like a movable type, like Gutenberg Bible. You can just rearrange the letters and then you can just print it, which makes it a lot more agile. We are able to adapt to the latest technology. We are able to adopt, you know, the latest advancements, and we're able to kind of like, you know, make things, you know, have the latest innovations in a very agile manner. Another thing that Mantle is excelled at is because Mantle inherited the large treasury from BitDAO. I think it's more than 3 billions now, and it's also the treasury.
So itself is more than 3 billion.
Yeah, it's the single largest on-chain treasury when you discount native tokens. So there are some other treasuries that claim to be bigger, but 99% of that treasury is denominated in their own token. Mm. But for Mantle, it has 270,000 ETH or ETH equivalents and hundreds of millions, like 300 millions of stable coins, making it the single largest on-chain treasury, even bigger than Ethereum itself.
So, you know, of course, we're going to have, we're just starting the bull market. There's, you know, there's going to be some dips here and there. So everyone's is going to be doing great. But, you know, inevitably, like, this is just being real. Bear market will come eventually. And, you know, what you're able to kind of like consolidate and build when the bear market come is hugely important when you have a large treasury at its back. And Mantle has a larger treasury than basically all the other L2s combined.
Mm. So guys, you guys are rapidly gaining momentum, right? Because you have one key product.
Yeah. So aside from the first core product that's Mantle Network, we also have this Ethereum staking protocol called Mantle LSP, and the token is METH or Meth, which is a great name. You know, we've been just totally abusing Breaking Bad memes like, you know, I am the danger and say my name, so on and so forth. So Mantle Staking ETH was launched only in December. So it's like less than 3 months and it's already the fourth largest, already kind of like breathing to the neck of Binance staked ETH, already leapfrogged Frax and Coinbase months in the past. I think like within like first 3 weeks, we already leapfrogged Coinbase staked ETH. And yeah, even Rocket Pool, the second largest staking protocol, is not that far. So currently we're actually limiting the cap because Mantle liquid staking protocol is actually giving users double the market yield. So like the average market yield for Ethereum staking protocol is about 3.6, and Mantle is offering about 7.2. So yeah, the level of enthusiasm is just great. It's people really love the meth.
The reason, sorry. The reason of the addiction of people, right?
Yeah.
Because we can say it. Double the yield is an incentive mechanism yeah. purely, yeah. or you guys are able with other ways to generate a better yield than the...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Because we like we have three...
People love the myth.
Yeah, we have 300... We have 270,000 ETH in the treasury. So we're actually staking our own ETH. And then we're just giving that the rewards from those ETH to the users. Yeah. So it is only something that someone who has already like a large ETH holding is able to do. Of course, like that is the biggest kind of like a gateway drug into meth, but when people actually sort of like start to use it, they really feel kind of like the UI, the UX is just so smooth. It's also because like we had the benefit of hindsight building only, you know, after the first generation of liquid staking protocols are done, and now there's a lot less friction. So, you know, remember the early days of Lido and Rocket Pool, you can't even withdraw because the merge hasn't happened. So when you actually put ETH into, you know, the beacon chain, you can actually withdraw afterwards. And then for us, it was started after the merge and then after kind of like all the kinks are ironed out. So it's a new generation, a modern design, really kind of like takes advantage of all the new technological advancements and weeding away the lessons we learned from kind of like the previous generation.
So 600,000 staked ETH, right?
Yeah.
Which is about 2.4 billion
yeah.
in total value locked. If the main way to get people addicted to Mantle is incentives, how do you make this grow and sustainable at the same time? What's the plan there?
Yeah.
To, you know, you said you're just on the neck of Binance. How do you overtake Binance? And I don't know, who is the second one?
Rocket Pool.
Rocket Pool, okay. What's the plan there?
So first of all, like, of course, like you want to use some kind of like incentive to lure people in, like, or to attract people. But once they kind of like come and really like the product itself, it makes it a lot easier. Like, you know, what happened with kind of like Uber and Grab in the early days, there was like a fierce competition. Like they needed to kind of like give not incentives, but they subsidized the cost. Nowadays, like, you know, ride sharing, it's like in Singapore, it's all Grab. Like they're not giving those incentives anymore. We will, you know, try to give it as long as possible. The benefit of having a large treasury is, and the whole thing, like the whole kind of like the mental ecosystem is built with this word is like, I think a lot of like Silicon Valley people like to use this being supple. So we see like a lot of others, like they're building kind of like at a breakneck space and speed and so on and so forth, but they're really fragile. It's like, you know, if anything, any of the variable changes, it makes it very, very difficult for them to, for the enterprise to make sense financially and economically. But for mental, we have very, very, how to sound less crass than deep pockets. We have large financial cushion to really allow us to make those decisions and then to be less absorbed by, you know, the whims and the momentary kind of like fads. And we're able to kind of like build more deliberately, think in much more longer terms. Like, you know, there was this recent kind of meme from Dune they were like, we make our plans in centuries. Something like that. Not necessarily centuries, but definitely like we have multiple cycles of plans.
So right now we're drowning in a sea of layer ones and layer two. What does the crypto world look like in 5 years?
Well, consolidation, evidently, it's for every technology. I think in a way, like having a lot of layer twos, I just saw like two layer twos announced their launch or like announced kind of like planned launch after a successful fundraising round. And one is called Zerion, another is called Ten. So like maybe you're going to have like all the different, and like they just kind of even too lazy to have an interesting name. They're just going to name them after numbers. But yeah, you have all of them because it's actually not bad. It's actually a social proof that we're on the right track. This is something that have people's imagination. And this is something that is going to be integral part of Ethereum. As I said, like layer twos are Ethereum now.
Mm.
But, you need to have enough suppleness to build through bull bear cycle. When hopefully it takes a long time for the bull run to have its full run. But when bear finally comes, who is in a good position financially, who has made good decisions to ensure that the community that they have acquired sticks around, even though, you know, a lot of the incentive is going to be gone, and they still have enough runway to both sustain kind of like the on the engineering side and on the kind of marketing community building side. A lot of times when both of them share the same budget, it becomes a very difficult decision to make, because like you still need to retain onto your users. But then are you just going to kind of cut the engineering cost? Mental has always kind of separated those budgets. And then Mental has always, you know, have the benefit of, a lot of support from our ecosystem partners, a lot of support from, you know, Bybit still gives us kind of a lot of like technological support. They would like look at our code, like they would have, they would help with a round of audit. And we receive a lot of support from like the likes of Eigenlayer and so on and so forth. And we also, repay those help handsomely. So EigenDA, Mental actually contributed a lot of the code base. So it's kind of like making good decisions, making sound financial judgment, also building solid partnerships. Like a lot of times, like the greatest asset you have is not necessarily, you know, the money in the bank, but rather the people you're coming to contact with. We really just view the likes of Eigenlayer and Bybit with such esteem and respect, and really just like appreciate them so much. A lot of like great dApps that deploy on Mental, like Ondo Finance, they have this tokenized US Treasury bills. So acts as a stablecoin, but instead of kind of like, say the likes of Circle or Tether, they keep the yield from the central bank. Ondo actually gives that yield to user holders, and we are the first, one of the first chains that actually the first chain outside of Ethereum to have Ondo finance USDY, and then on Mental has a Mental exclusive version called MUSD, and you know we're working with Athena. Athena is this sort of a stablecoin built out of futures positions on centralized exchanges, because the bull market, there's so much money to be paid to be in a short position. So they can actually kind of give people really, really good returns by holding this synthetic US dollar called USDE. like 20% APY. That's completely different than sort of like how Terra Luna did it, because they just kind of like were giving people money from their treasury, whereas Athena is actually making money by earning those
funding fees
on central exchanges, and while still able to give that yield to users.
You said before that what made you guys decide to kind of transform BitDAO into Mantle and become a layer two, yeah. Ethereum layer two, is that your thesis was that the layer ones would fade away and Ethereum basically consolidated as the main layer one.
Yeah.
Why are so many layer ones still launching? And maybe we can put that, I mean, there's probably you mentioned before for the layer two, hey, it's a good sign because it means that people are very creative. But I see also by being not, let's say, not too naive, and we get the financial aspect of launching tokens for VCs, right? That is extremely profitable. Mm-hmm. What's your take on like the launch of all these layer ones? And I actually interview a lot of them, right?
No, I won't say like I think all of them gonna fade away. It's just kind of like they need to kind of really find a niche to occupy, and it doesn't actually matter that you don't become the dominant kind of like smart contract platform. As I said, like the internet is so great, that the world is so big, that if you just occupy a very small niche and then you have very passionate users, it's actually enough. But in terms of being the sort of like almost a commonwealth of the internet computer, we really do not see anyone challenging Ethereum's supremacy, at least kind of as the current, like we extend the current kind of like trajectory out to the next bull cycle. We still think Ethereum is going to be dominant. Is Solana doing great? It is, absolutely. Avalanche is doing great. Mm. But is it going to be replacing Ethereum? Is it going to be the Ethereum killer? No, it's not going to be that, because it's now... catering to a slightly different audience. People are gonna try new things. One thing about like human endeavor, or really any endeavor, even like the endeavor of evolution, the unthinking evolution, but like it throws all the possible ways at it. Like when you look at kind of the fossils, there are so many interesting choices made. Like to think, like, you know, everything living on Earth at this moment actually share a common ancestors all the way back, right? Like we share a common ancestor with the lunch we ate, because the only thing that we eat that has never been alive is salt. Everything else has been alive at some point in time. And how many choices have been made? Like we look nothing alike, say like a watermelon, even though we share like a lot of our DNA was even a watermelon, or like a banana. Like we share 90% of our DNA with a rat. Hmm. We share 98.2% of our DNA with a gorilla. Like people like to talk about, you know, how different cultures are different, when all that difference and all the things we are able to achieve with, you know, all the monuments and the cathedrals, sending a man to the moon, creating, you know, blockchain, is just in that 1.8%.
Hmm.
I should never kind of like to be quick to judge other people's choices. And then, you know, they are just throwing different solutions at a problem and see, you know, what sticks. And I think, you know, to have more project launching is actually a positive sign of people seeing opportunity in the space. And then, you know, their enthusiasm will bring more people in, because there's nothing so magnetic and so attractive than passionate people at work.
Absolutely. You talked about Solana, obviously, the other layer one that's starting to be, that to pick up. I mean, actually, it's kind of like booming right now, especially because of the meme coin mania, right? And you said, hey, now with these upgrades, layer twos are actually cheaper than Solana. But the cost is not everything, right? And I'm going to challenge a bit the layer twos here.
Yeah,
because that's my job, obviously. And I think as a I understand crypto. I've been in crypto probably 6 to 7 years, but I'm not a very technical person. I think I'm like most people. I'm kind of lazy, right? I don't like hassle.
We all are a little.
So I see some people writing some things on Twitter that actually make sense to me and that I want you to challenge or to basically give your own honest take on. And there's two things. The first one is about Solana. Someone saying, I'm now completely normalized to Solana speed and UX. Painful to get back to ETH. It's like when I first got used to ETH and then had to go back to Bitcoin.
Right.
Except going back to BTC, the slowness and rawness feels like you're moving gold. With ETH, it's just annoying. Many such cases. So what's your honest take on that? If you have to take, you know, obviously there is good and bad everywhere, right? Maybe you can give us both aspects.
Yeah, I think it's... I think those considerations are very valid. But I think it also is because the industry is still so new that people are comparing Ethereum and Bitcoin and Solana. In 20 years' time, if all three are still thriving, they would be doing very different things. It's because we are at such beginnings. So like even though they're making very different choices, it's like you go all the way back to the Jurassic or the Cambrian evolution when everything is just starting. Like nowadays, you wouldn't compare a human and an elephant or like a whale, even though they're all mammals. It would be the same with enough time. You know, you're already seeing a divergence between the audience for Bitcoin, for Ethereum, for Solana. Of course, like there are people who use them all and people who use them for different purposes. And as time progresses, as more choices are made, you will see those divergences become even greater. As of this bull run, especially since the start of year, Solana has really captured people's imagination with its, great meme coin culture. And Ethereum tend to be... have more whales. Like whales are not going to be chasing every meme coin. And then they have the greatest number of developers working on it. And one thing about layer two is that I really truly believe this is layer two has now become Ethereum post Denquan. Layer two is just how people with, less capital to start with will interact with Ethereum a few months down the road. Like they would be, their transactions will be eventually included in a blob on Ethereum, but how they deal with it, especially with the help of account abstraction and the abstraction away of like multiple chains, they will just look at, say that someone is a Coinbase user, they will just look at, oh, I can get something from something that's on Ethereum and ERC, but Base chain is the cheapest and fastest solution, I'll just use Base.
But obviously, ideally, these people don't even have to make that choice.
Yeah.
It's made for them because there is another layer on the top that's kind of making the best decision for them. Because like the next point is exactly about that layer twos, right? There's a guy, he's a friend of a guy who is pretty big on Twitter and who's like a really smart dude. Writing, lol, well, I do pretty much only use mainnet, talking about ETH, right? Mm. I'd rather pay the fees than deal with the brain damage of understanding the liquidity fragmentation landscape and bridging. And to be very honest, again, like, because at some point there's so many layer twos and you're doing different things and you need to bridge. Obviously, like you use your MetaMask. It's not that complicated to click a button. You know, a year, 2 years ago, it was more complicated to add Arbitrum or Polygon. Now you just click a button, you go on a dApp and you say switch network.
Yeah.
But you still need to do all that stuff. And then you need to fund your wallet with the right coin, right? To be able to pay the transaction fees.
This
is a problem.
It's absolutely. This is a problem. And this is a completely valid criticism because it shouldn't be on the users to be able to figure that out. It should be the user experience that is made for them that is better. And the reassuring thing is like the best minds already working on it. Like our friends at Safe have been Safe the the creator Safe, like the previously Gnosis Safe, but they're already charging away on account abstraction, and then a lot of people are working on that, like with now they call smart wallets. Basically, like you don't need to have all those technical know-how or the understanding of like the difference between multiple chains. The user interface should just give you the best choice given the time and given the decision you're trying to make. So one thing that's truly something that it's a great investment thesis as well. And so like Mantle has its eco fund that's a catalyzed capital pool of 200 million. It's investing in a lot of great projects. It's already completed its first round of 10 million, asking for the second capital call of 30 million now. But one of the things that it's investing in is intent-based protocols. So what it does is like, it doesn't like, oh, look at, you know, user, oh, I want to bridge to Arbitrum. I need to kind of move funds from this chain to that chain. Is what do you want to do? And then we'll just find the optimal routing at this moment in time, given the status of various blockchain, find the best route. It's like, you know, almost like using ChatGPT or AI, try to figure out kind of what is the optimal. There's this famous kind of like mathematical problem from the 17th century in the city of Königsberg that is now in the Russian enclave that is surrounded by the Baltic countries and in Poland. But it was also the birth city of Immanuel Kant, the German philosopher. But there's famously like seven bridges in the city, and then mathematicians were trying to figure out if there's a way that you don't repeat your path, but cross all seven bridges. And it was like remain unsolved for hundreds of years. And then Google came along and actually used machine learning and AI decided it's impossible not to trace back. So in a way, it's just kind of, you know, let's find the best route to be able to do this. And it's intent-based, meaning that, you know, user, you only need to tell the user interface, this is the end result I want to see. Figure out the best way for me. Oh, that rhymed, incidentally.
So to that kind of comments, you're not gonna say, I don't really care. You're gonna say it's valid,
yeah,
but it doesn't really matter because the current state of the technology advancement and progress in crypto regarding these layer twos and even layer ones is there's a layer on the top that should make the decision for which one is being used for the user.
Yeah.
But it's not there yet, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And therefore it's completely valid. But yeah. then it poses a challenge for the layer two strategy in terms of development, right? Because you need to build something that's going to be used, but without people knowing it, right? But currently, this layer on the top is not really there. But if you want to survive, obviously you have a big treasury, but you want adoption. Yeah. So you still need to have the users. Probably the meth one is a really smart one, you know,
how
to get people addicted to my platform and have more TVL. But you almost need, I'd say it's almost like everything in life, which is there's the main, let's think about someone who works in a corporation, right? In a big corporation with a lot of politics. It's the same. Do I think about the big vision of the company or do I think about myself in this kind of context and make the best decision short term that will lead me to my decision, my goal long term? But I need to take all these other things into account, which are not optimal for long term, but that are the case, right?
Yeah, so
it's probably one of the key challenges for most layer twos today.
That's a great observation. I'll try to kind of like take it into different steps. So first I'll say like about, just like people saying, you know, this is not great enough kind of like user experience and they don't want to use it. I think it's just a momentary thing. It's like, you know, even the CEO of IBM itself in the 40s said the market for personal computer in the world is like 4. But he was just looking at the moment. Like nowadays, like, you know, with the hindsight of 80 years of advancements, everyone almost like have a personal computer in our phone. Right. So, those challenges, they will eventually be overcome and then people will be using all those layer twos. They will be interacting with Ethereum primarily through layer two, but they wouldn't even need to notice that. But then when you talk about kind of brand building, it's great. Like you have a recognized brand, but you don't need to be a recognized brand to be successful. So, you know, who of us are thinking about the utility brands that provides gas, electricity, and different kind of utility internet to ourselves, as much as we're thinking about sort of like popular kind of fashion brands, and even to talk about fashion brands. So I don't even remember the name, but like something Lutica, whatever. They're actually the brand that produces sunglasses for almost everyone, including Ray-Ban, including like Chanel, all those. It's actually produced by the same company, but you barely heard the name. And they now are looking at interest. I heard on a podcast, they are working on smart glasses. They already had a partnership with Ray-Ban and Meta with the MetaStar smart glasses. And they are now working on another thing, is the hearing aids, because one of the things that comes problem with hearing aids, because it's so obvious, so it comes with a lot of stigma, so people don't want to use it. But with the new like sunglasses, you wouldn't know they're wearing it. So that's a great way to, but like, have we ever heard of this brand? We never heard of this brand. So, you know, it wouldn't be a bad world if people are using Mental just like how they are getting other electricity or sunglasses without even registering in their mind the Mental brand. So what we think is that we are building a sort of like technology platform on which you can build the killer apps. So, you know, for example, this account abstraction, ultimate routing, intent-based ultimate routing, it doesn't need to be built by us, but we will work with, you know, dApps trying to build that. And Mental is one of the best when it comes to kind of like enticing and encouraging it and supporting dApps. Like when you talk to different ecosystem partners, they always say, you know, Mental gives them the best support. Mental's BD team, Mental's engineering team is just like the level of responsiveness and the level of support. It's just, they've never seen any other chain. And we also have, you know, a very robust grant program. We have one of the single largest ecosystem fund, and it's denominated in stablecoin. Unlike most of the other ecosystem found, they're in their own coin. So, you know, when we give money to others, there's no price pressure on Mental's own coin. And then, you know, we just really believe that, you know, we don't have to find solution for everything. We just need to create a great incubator working environment for the brilliant minds who will come up with those solutions by building their dApps to entice them into Mental and then to build it on Mental. If we're able to build all that and then people forget about Mental altogether, but people are using Mental every day, they only remember the dApps that are able to do all that. They don't even remember what Mental is. That's fine by us.
Achieved, yeah, absolutely. You talk about, you know, all these dApps, right? Obviously, every layer one or every layer two needs a lot of application. That's what you derive your value from. And these dApps, they come solving some specific issues, right? And then they work or they don't. There is also another specific kind of, it's not really applications, but projects. And obviously, I'm referring here to meme coins. The reason why Solana is basically so successful is meme coins.
Yeah.
That where you have, like, actually, if I talk to the meme coin thing is a really interesting one, because in the beginning in crypto, you think it's dumb, right? But the more you go through cycles and the more you talk to big brains, the more you start to understand the concept. And actually, a lot of big brains, again, like, you know, you'd have the classic meme. Meme coins, the right curves and left curve. Understand meme coins.
Bell curve, yeah.
Is the ones in the middle that don't understand it. I think it's dumb. If you talk to the right, the people in the right curve, the big brains, one of the things they say is, I think meme coins are really interesting, and I like them at least a lot for one reason: they don't promise anything.
Yeah,
that is bullshit, right? Which is a lot of the problem of a lot of, crypto projects, right? Obviously, when you have this cycle and people want to surf the wave when it's going well, you're going to promise a lot of things and talk about narrative that you're not necessarily even in. So what's your big brain take on meme coins?
Yeah, I wouldn't call myself a big brain, but like, I think meme coin is definitely something that no one should just kind of think it's stupid or write off. Because I think if there's one thing that is even more a scarce resource than money in this market, is actually the amount of attention span. And meme coin is able to, because in a way, it has the best technology. It's a technology that's called prices go up. It's this amazing technology. Like in a way, it captures people's mind more so than roll up in L2. The greatest mind concentrating technology of blockchain is called prices go up. But when you actually think about it, really, like any technology, you need adoption for it to really go parabolic. You know, because we live in a society, coming back to that, what gives anything value is that humans value it. Like, you know, why does anything has value? It's because humans value it. If humans weren't here, if there's not another species that come up to the society, nothing's going to have value. Like the whole thing about supply demand scarcity, it's only because humans, we decided we're going to exchange value. We're going to pay for it. So, you know, if something is able to capture people's imagination simply by being a meme and being mind concentrating, it has both the idea of being a meme. So like it's hugely transmutable, virally transmutable. And it has the other compelling case that is price go up. It's a great way of, you know, putting that in front of people's mind. And those people who would come just as most people came to the came to our space in the first place for speculation.
Absolutely. Well, I was about to say that Bitcoin price is when it goes up like crazy, or in 2013 or 17, that people get attracted to the space.
Yeah, like with a few autistic spectrum people aside, I have huge respect for those people. Well over 99.99% of people came to this space. The first thing is speculation. And then when they look around, they find something they like, they stay, they mellow. You know, this is kind of like a funnel that filters through. But everyone comes to this place, first thing first, speculation. So when you're able to have this powerful tool that is Memecoin, that is able to capture people's imagination and bring them in, it's actually great. Because then a portion of those people will stay for the technology.
And I would even say maybe technology is third. You have price go up first, best technology.
Yeah.
Second, you have the actual memes. So I'm talking about the meme coins. You have the memes. Came for price go up. Okay, I got wrecked, fine, but I stayed for the memes because I have so much fun, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And if you think about it, and actually meth is exactly, the thing you talk about is, obviously you have your rate that's higher, but how do you even capture people's attention in the beginning?
Yeah.
Hey, let's do something about Breaking Bad, right?
Yeah.
Meth, and you have a chief alchemist, right?
Yes.
So it's just all, it can sound so stupid, but like the most scarce resource is attention, because people have known, literally. So how do you attract people's attention? Price goes up and memes.
Yeah.
And now you put both of them together and you get these meme coins.
Absolutely.
And if you understand that, you realize it's pretty amazing. And there is still a lot of people who are very smart in crypto who are kind of like mid-curving memes, or are starting to say, maybe I'll go into Doge. But now you have a lot of different flavors, and some actually, when you're deep, like in the meme rabbit hole, I'm not talking about the meme coins mania on Solana, right? I'm talking about a few meme coins that I would say like have certain market cap, maybe in the billions, but like you actually start to realize it makes sense. And then you also start to realize, if you want to be very honest to yourself, most people love to gamble. So, meme coin is basically gambling, but a new type of gambling, right? A lot of people go to play the lottery, but now you can do that online and while having much more fun. And what if meme coin are a new way for people to actually gamble, but it's much more fun?
Absolutely. This is an interesting kind of, because I studied psychology in university, like actually evaluated why people gamble. It's not necessarily they always want to win. Sometimes just the adrenaline itself is what they're after. So they don't necessarily, like, of course, when you ask them, they were like, oh, we're chasing for the big win. A lot of them are. But at the end of the day, like a lot of them, like those playing the slot machine, maybe they're just want that rush of excitement. I think even for like, meme coin, like it's not just gambling, it's storytelling and finding a community. It sounds like all cliched, old-timey, but when you think about kind of like, how did what is the thing that really sets us apart from the other lives, the other creatures on Earth? Humans since the beginning, even what we are doing now, is we huddle around a campfire, we huddle around a bonfire to tell stories. At the end of the day, when it's dark, you know, like we need the human need of warmth and community. And, you know, meme coin is the best way to feel invited. Because otherwise, is that my campfire? There's other people's campfire. Meme coin is so welcoming. It's like, come to our campfire. We'll tell some silly stories. You don't need to have any prior knowledge. You don't need to have any skills. You don't need to belong to this group. As long as you decide, oh, you know, this is campfire I choose. I want to belong to this group. And it's just a very welcoming, you know, a lot of people just want to find the group that they belong. And this is the innate human need to find belonging and to find their community. And then, you know, if they, of course, like money is great, but, you know, it actually satisfies, you know, multiple desires and needs in yourself. So it's actually a very complex and very sophisticated thing, and you know, don't let anyone sort of like chastise meme coin as dumb.
I love it. That was a great one, actually. So we have a section in this podcast where we talk about the guests' favorite projects and teams, and you have a few projects you're really bullish on. We talked about two already: Eigenlayer, Athena. We'll go through them separately again, but because we're talking about meme coin,
yeah,
and I know there is a meme coin that just launched recently.
Boom. You're talking about Boom?
Boom. And I was talking about on Mentor.
Puff. Yeah.
I mean, let's talk about Boom first.
Yeah.
And then talk about Puff the Dragon on Mentor. So let's start with Boom.
Yeah. Great stuff. Like I looked at them. I haven't been paying too much close attention. It launched like less than 48 hours ago. Now it's already more than 1 billion. And it's like just outside of 100, top 100 coins. Like by the time we finish our recording, if we looked at CoinGecko, maybe it's already within 100.
Yeah. How do you explain that?
You can't explain it. It's just the power of like, so of course, like because it came after sort of a whiff and all that, people are already primed to think, you know, if this is the first meme coin in this season, then it wouldn't be so successful so fast. But like, you know, it definitely pays to be on the right trend, having the momentum. And, you know, a lot of times like meme coins are actually launched by very smart people. That's what kind of we can segue to Puff the Dragon.
Yeah. Well, so Puff the Dragon.
Yeah. Yeah.
First meme coin on Mento.
One of the first. It's not the first, but like
what's so special about Puff the Dragon, except that it's very cute?
Very cute. And I think in a way it's just kind of like it's already doing so much world building. It's so great. And then it takes math. And then the UI UX is just great. Like it looks when you look at it, you just know a lot of work was put into it. A lot of heart, tear, and sweat was put into it. You know, our own beloved, esteemed colleague, chief alchemist Jody Alexander is involved in it.
Absolutely,
of course, yeah. Like in his personal capacity. And there's you know, it's a completely community run meme coin. But when you look at the level of attention, the level of preparation and thought deliberation put into it, it just is really almost like a work of art. And they have a lot of like interesting, so that currently it's chapter one, is a lot of like things being cooked. So like I know more than I can talk about, and I'm not personally involved in the development of it, but when I look at like all the partnerships and all the next chapters they have planned, you just can't help but be super bullish about it. Because again, coming back to what I said a while ago, is like there's nothing as infectious and magnetic than dedicated people, passionate people at work.
Do you think that's the most important thing for a meme coin to be successful? Because if you look at, for example, Whiff, right? It's a cute dog with a hat. And that's one of the, I mean, obviously then you have like some mega influencers that are, I mean, I even chipped in for the Las Vegas Sphere because I'm also a holder, and I was like, man, this makes so much sense. And it's going to be fun just to have like the freaking dog with the hat on the sphere. But there's much less work put, let's say there's a lot of BD and marketing work put on that, but much less on the entire concept.
Yeah. Something doesn't need to start fully. So a baby doesn't need to come out of the womb fully. I just like to throw out tangents so much. So if you go to look at those European museums, you would see like those medieval paintings, all the babies down there so ugly. Do you know why? Because most of them are actually depicting Jesus, and they're trying to depict Jesus as fully formed, complete. So because medieval paintings, they're not for aesthetics, they're for storytelling, because back then most people are illiterate. So all the arts, they were meant for churches, and they were trying to tell the story. They're trying to teach morals. So, you know, a baby, like, this is a long way of saying, it doesn't have to come out fully formed. We love Renaissance babies who are cute and cherubim like a lot more. It may have started as a silly idea, like, oh, it's dog and hat, oh, it's cool. But the success it has had sinks. You cannot just chalk it off or to just a bunch of silly dudes came out with a silly idea. Anything that's successful, we always like to, you know, chalk our success to grit and to inventiveness, and other people's success to luck. Luck is hugely important, but I think any success, there is a lot of hard work and grit and stick-to-itness that's involved. And I think for something that's more than a flash in the pan, something that is a success that will sustain and last. You basically see this curve of silly inventiveness start to diminish in its importance, and grit and stick-to-itness grow in importance throughout the time axis.
Absolutely. So there's these two other protocols that, I mean, we talked about before already, but let's go one by one. And again here, let's imagine that you're talking to your mother, right? Mm. The first one is eigenlayer. So first explain me what eigenlayer is, if you had to explain it to your mother, and then explain me why you're so bullish on eigenlayer.
Right. So eigenlayer, like I actually said a little bit before, it's like, you know, on-demand liquidity and security. It's liquidity and security for blockchain, like Uber is on-demand ride-sharing for mobility. What is kind of one of the biggest initial challenge for a lot of project owners, founders, is that when they try to build something new, they need to bootstrap liquidity, bootstrap security, and they don't have that. What Eigenlayer allows it to do is, like, you know, the joke is like new economy, Uber has no cars, Airbnb has no rooms, and so on and so forth. A lot of those founders, they have a brilliant idea, but they don't have the entire market cap of Ethereum at their back for liquidity and security. Eigenlayer allows you to do that. So you can start from day one. You can, if you build on Eigenlayer, you're able to basically have those ETH stakers to restake on your protocol and then supply you with the security and liquidity, the way, you know, Ethereum is already built, gives you the tap into the greatest liquidity and security of any smart contract platform in the world.
Why is this so important for the space? And why was this not invented before?
That the second question is I don't even know. But a lot of times, like, when you have sort of like something of this caliber, you just think, oh, you know, this is such a simple idea. It's such like, but a lot of it is like people can have ideas. They falter as execution and grit and stick to it. I think why is this so powerful is because now you really open the door for the Crimean explosion. Like now the threshold for someone coming up a great idea and execute it becomes so much lower. Because before, like, you know, someone who's building a new layer one, they need to figure out, you know, how do I not get 51% attacked? Mm. Nowadays, like, you know, you can just build an eigenlayer and then, you know, even if you don't have any startup capital, you can do it. You're going to be as secure as Ethereum.
It's essentially the same way as, the internet evolved. Yep. Everything became much easier, and then you started to have platforms that enable you, it's less a problem of security. I mean, you could say the cloud, for example. You have a few companies running the cloud, and then you don't really have to worry too much about security. I mean, obviously, this could be a rabbit hole on its own, right? But hey, I can build my own stuff and kind of renting cloud up from out there, or just building a business or startup. I can just, the internet lowered the cost massively because of the evolution in time, right? Here it's kind of the same in terms of security and liquidity. That's made easier, right?
Yeah, basically it abstracts away two of the greatest kind of like block of like writer's block, starter's block, like and then allow the project developer to focus on the problem that they're trying to solve instead of like the problems they need to address before they can present their solution.
Absolutely. You're also hyper bullish on Athena. Mm-hmm. I don't think you're the only one. Mm-hmm. What's Athena, if you had to explain it to your mother? And why are you and pretty much your entire space so excited on what Athena is building?
It's a synthetic dollar built with basically positions on centralized exchanges. The way it works is this was an idea that Arthur Hayes, co-founder of BitMEX, had several years ago. He was trying to do it on Bitcoin, but Athena is doing it on Ethereum. Is that most of the people, like vast majority of the people in the crypto space, are actually still on centralized exchanges, and centralized exchanges are actually far more powerful. Like, we love all the innovation in decentralized space, but we cannot, not admit that centralized exchanges, they have the lion's share of basically 90% of liquidity that goes through the space goes through centralized exchanges, and there's actually money to be made there, because what are some of the like biggest players in the space actually market makers and investors, and how they make money is to be, market making on centralized exchanges, earning a funding rate. Mm. So especially for futures, for perpetual contracts, in order to kind of like have the price anchored to the spot price, they apply this thing called funding rate every 8 hours. If the price is above the spot, you would basically have people who are long paying people who are short, and then vice versa if the price is lower. So
it's basically, to make it simple, because a lot of people love leverage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you can make much more if you're right. Obviously, you can lose much more if you're wrong. Mm-hmm. If the price of Bitcoin goes up, or any altcoin that has perps, right? People, we anticipate that it's going to go up more on average.
Yeah.
Therefore, they're going to long more.
Yeah.
But at some point, because long and short is a market in itself.
Yeah.
You need to have a mechanism that incentivizes not everyone to be long, right?
Yeah.
That's the funding fee.
To keep it equilibrium.
To make it very simple, right?
Yeah.
That's the funding fee.
Yeah.
And so, but obviously a lot of traders or retail traders don't necessarily know that. Let's say like the normies, yeah, right? Or don't care because think that the price is still going to go up.
Yeah.
But then you have some other people who are very smart, who come and say, actually, I don't really care whether the price goes up, yeah, or down. I just want to pocket the difference on the funding fees. And during a bull market, everyone is long. Let's say, to make it simple, most people are very long. Therefore, the funding fees are very high and pay the people who short very well.
Yeah.
And that's the mechanism,
yes,
underlying Athena, right?
Yeah.
Stablecoin.
So they're able to give people like almost, I think like around 20% APY by holding their synthetic dollar USDE while making millions every day. And that also just tells you how much centralized exchanges actually make.
Yeah.
That,
yeah,
they're able to afford like sponsorships like Rebel. Just like the amount of money centralized exchanges make is just astounding.
And market makers too.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right. I mean, I had a bunch of CEOs, founders from centralized exchange. I had also the two co-founders of the, GSR and the Wintermute.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I kind of know about like the, let's say, potential of, but I think a lot of people still don't understand that, how crazy the money is in those specific companies, basically, verticals. Whereas, yeah, for a lot of other people in crypto, it's much harder to make money. A lot of other, this is like kind of diverting, but if you think about what are the best ways to make money in crypto today, market making, exchanges, right? Mm-hmm. And then you have these projects that are sitting on a huge treasury and generate yield from that treasury and then can fund,
yeah,
their operations, right? But it's still very hard for other kind of projects to make a lot of money, especially in the long term.
Yeah, I mean, since the beginning of time, when you have a lot to start with, like even if you're just making penny on a dollar for what you're holding, like if you start up crypto, capital is huge. It's like, you know, the Nobel Prize. Nobel Prize is still, you know, after more than like almost 200 years, still giving all those prize monies, $1 million for like a win of chemistry. Just from this inventor, like his savings from all those years ago. And they're not touching the principal. They're just giving the interest.
Yeah.
So, you know, what, in this sense, Athena is doing something similar to what Mantle does is like, you know, we are just taking the interest we are earning to fund development. Athena, like, is it building something that is truly groundbreaking? I mean, in a sense, that this product itself is, yeah. But is the concept behind it? Not necessarily. It's just we have a lot of money that we can throw around. And just the money that's grown from that large capital is enough to make everyone happy.
So what's the bet there? Obviously, you're going to take the opportunity of the bull run, but what's the bet in a bear market? Can you make the funding fees on the other side by being long when everyone is short? I mean, probably there's going to be much fewer people who are short because the retail people are not going to short, right? But, or much less, I'd say. But, or saying, hey, we have accumulated so much money that no problem during a bear market, we can either still give some incentives like you guys are doing at Mantle on ETH or METH. Or just say, hey, like, we can even give a portion of the treasury away because, and build other things, obviously, right?
Yeah, I mean, crypto people are looking at much shorter terms. I think it's very good to look at long term, and we are totally for that.
Sorry for that.
No, but I think, you know, they obviously have a plan. But I think as of this moment, the launch is very, very opportune because we're just at the start of a bull market. So in a way, maybe they can make so much in this bull market that that's enough to sustain them for several bear markets.
Yeah, absolutely. What's intelligence to you? I asked you yesterday, what's your IQ, right?
Yeah.
You said, you don't know, you don't want to say, or you don't care. But then you started to question, what is intelligence?
Right. I mean, this is a multi-layered question. So like when people talk about IQ, I think like one of the things that most of us have in some way taken an IQ test, but most of it is actually kind of pattern recognition and problem solving. I don't think that's the full of intelligence. Kind of, I think yesterday I was throwing out Mozart and Bach as examples.
And the dolphins.
Yeah. They are famously, both of them are able to play a piece of music after hearing it just once, and they're able to play the entire thing perfectly. And this is something that, you know, someone who, because I like Rome, Cicero basically is the guy who is most famous for like the way like Latin languages is coded, established, is mainly contributable to him, like modern English a lot, like thanks to Shakespeare. Shakespeare invented more than 2,000 words, including eyeball. Apparently, we didn't have the word eyeball before Shakespeare. And then Dante was hugely responsible for like the modern language of Italian because he just had the Tuscan dialect, and people wrote in Latin back then, and not a lot of them actually wrote in dialects. But you know, in intelligence, like, you know, they can be very different, and if we're only measuring like problem solving skills and pattern recognition, they're very important skills, but we're not really capturing the full spectrum of what people are able to do. And then another thing that I said, I was like, you know, we have heard dolphins who are able to master thousands of human words, but not a single human who are able to master multiple dolphin words. If we're measuring like intelligence in that way, aren't dolphins more smarter than humans?
Absolutely.
I think another thing is like, we just decided the things, like even when we're measuring intelligence of other animals, like are they able to recognize themselves in a mirror? Are they able to you know, understand human words? Are they able to do pattern recognition? Some gorillas can even memorize you know, places on a screen better than humans. But like what we are testing them is for, you know, human tasks. I think a true measure of intelligence should be like how a species is able to adapt to their environment the best. So when we are testing for like you know, animals, it should be like what benefits them in their natural habitat instead of like the task that a human can perform. But also just like, you know, when we talk about, oh, you know, people like to say, oh, you know, humans are intelligent species, or like, you know, why aren't there, like, there mustn't be other intelligent species in the universe, because like why haven't they visited us? So one thing is, it's just like hugely assumption assumptions of us to say we are the only intelligent species because we defined intelligence. It's like a VC sort of like investing, like when we talk, when we were at this dinner the other day, is like VC going to every next round, round A, round B, investing in the same company, leading the same VC, then marking their own work. Mm. In a sense, it's like, you know, we just decided what we are able to do is intelligence. Why is it? Why is that true? Is, you know, like alien species, and I truly believe space aliens exist. It doesn't even require belief. It's a matter of fact. It is the trillions of stars in the universe. And when people ask, oh, you know, if they exist, why haven't they visited us? It's because, like, you know, even if they don't even need to be that smart, like to be able to traverse the space time, the vastness of space time, because the farthest human made object hasn't even left the sun's gravitational well. To be like to go to the next closest star, it's 4 light years. It takes like hundreds of thousands of years for the fastest human made object to travel there. If a alien species is able to travel multiple light years to visit us, they will be so far advanced as nothing that we have is of interest to them. Like, just think, like, when was the last time we stopped to have a conversation with ants? Because, like, you think, oh, ants are so primitive. Like, we are only 1.8% smarter than gorillas in terms of the difference in DNA. And ants, not that different. Just imagine there's an alien species who are 1.8% smarter than us, the way we are 1.8% smarter than gorillas. What are they able to achieve? Everything we do will be not of interest to them. Like, so like one thing that people often talk about, you know, when aliens come to us, that one thing they will want is Bitcoin. They would have figured that out. Like one thing that's actually not bullish for crypto is like when we actually encounter alien species, like nothing that we can offer will be of interest to them, not even cryptocurrency, even though maybe this is the most supreme form of a currency and method of exchange we have created. But like, you know, there's actually so much abundance in the universe. Like, you know, gold may be rare, but gold is actually not rare on Earth, but gold, the rarest thing is actually ruby in terms of gemstones. But like everything might be rare, but when you look at the vastness of the space, like nothing is rare.
So I'm obviously not going to ask you as a wrap up for this podcast, I'm obviously not going to ask you the...
Sorry for going on so many tangents.
The kind of logical question where a lot of people will ask you, so do you believe there is life somewhere else in the universe? Obviously there is, right?
Yeah.
Like it's mathematically almost impossible, or let's say it's mathematically impossible that there is no life somewhere else. Mm-hmm. My question would be, how many other planets or stars, or maybe even things that we can't see, because we have, you know, we have our senses.
Yeah.
Like how many others kind of civilizations exist?
Yeah, it's going to be innumerable. So like the observable universe is about 192 like thousands of light years across, and then even just beyond that, because like light hasn't traveled far enough since the Big Bang to reach us, and they may never reach us because the universe is expanding faster than light can reach us. But even just in our own backyard, in like moons of Jupiter and Saturn, you have Enceladus that has warm plumes underneath its icy shell. You have water there. You may have water on Europa, which is another moon of Jupiter. Europa is what Europe, the continent, was named after, because Europa was a princess of Phoenicia, modern day Lebanon, Levant. It was abducted by Zeus, carried on Zeus's back in the form of a bull to Crete. So Crete was actually like the original name of Europa. It's like Asia. Now we think of Asia, we think of East Asia, Singapore. Asia originally meant this Roman province on the west coast of Turkey. Modern-day Turkey, Anatolia, and like Africa used to just mean Tunis. That's where the old Carthage is. But if we find life on Europa, what are we going to call them? We have to call them Europeans. Sorry, that's not a joke that kind of I really clicked with this audience. But, you know, like, there might be life in our own backyard. Like, the reason, like, it's like to say, oh, just because we haven't seen aliens, they must not exist, is like to take this glass and go to the East Coast Park, go to the beach, scoop up water into this and see, oh, there's no fish in there. Mm. There must be fish. There mustn't be fish in the entire ocean.
Yeah.
Yeah, but when we meet space aliens, like, there's no even point to resist or anything. It's just like, you know, we submit to, because like, if they're able to have such technological advancements to travel all the way here, then there's nothing that we can do to resist them, or like basically they can have their pick.
Man, the next podcast is going to be about that. Aliens.
Excellent.
Astrology, astronomy.
I'll be sure to watch that.
That's going
to
be, I mean the next one with you.
Oh, okay.
The next one with you.
Right.
Because it could probably be another 5-hour conversation. What's your biggest prediction for next 12 months?
Next 12 months, full bull run. Like, we're before Bitcoin halving and we already hit multiple all-time highs. It's, yeah. Like, if history rhymes, like a lot of times it rhymes, just how the price performs after halving as compared to the price at halving. We are looking at Bitcoin at least doubling, if not like even higher, 2x, 3x of its current price. So yeah, very excited about the bull run that we are already in.
Absolutely amazing. Thank you so much for doing this, man.
Thanks.
That was a hell of a conversation.
Thrilled to be here. Thank you for having me.